This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Over the course of a week, three mass shootings in Gilroy, California, El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, renewed a sense of despair, fear, sadness, and anger for many Americans. Officials are investigating two of the incidents as domestic terrorism, and the suspected shooter in El Paso is said to have expressed anti-immigrant and anti-Hispanic views. On Monday, President Trump gave a prepared speech where he condemned racist ideologies.
The shooter in El Paso posted a manifesto online consumed by racist hate. In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. Hatred warps the mind, ravages the heart, and devours the soul.
President Trump went on to say that he has instructed the FBI to identify resources necessary to disrupt hate crimes and domestic terrorism. These words were in contrast to many of the remarks the president has made in the past. Yesterday, I spoke with Vermont Congressman Peter Welch, and I asked him if there was a way to use the president's remarks on Monday to push him for action to curb the rise in violence attributed to white nationalism, including the possible motive of the suspected shooter in El Paso.
The president's words in that speech were fine, but they're not credible because his entire career, essentially, from when he began running and even before, has been to stoke up these divisions.
Does the fact that he said those words mean that you have an opening to essentially call him on it and make him and make Republicans take action?
Yes, it does, and we should follow through on that. The president in the past has used good words after an event like Charlottesville, but then followed it up with very disruptive comments about there's good on, quote, both sides. And there is no good on neo-Nazi views. But we should do everything that we can to follow up, and it should start with some common-sense gun legislation. You know, the House has passed a strong background check bill that is sitting in the Senate. Mitch McConnell won't bring it up. And, you know, you contrast what's happening with the stonewalling there with what happened in Vermont after we had that near tragedy at Fairhaven. We had a Democratic legislature and our Republican governor, Phil Scott, who came together to pass very significant gun safety legislation. So I'd like to see us follow through on that with actions, not just words.
So the background check legislation could move forward. Are you hearing your Republican colleagues talk at all in a different way after these two shootings over the weekend? I've heard some Republican legislators speaking differently about their stances on firearms restrictions.
Well, they are. But keep in mind that when we passed this in the House, we had Republican support. I mean, this is a common sense step. Do a background check before somebody gets a gun. And many Republican senators, Tim Scott, has indicated that he would go back to Washington and support that. Mitch McConnell is stonewalling, and the president is not giving it the support that we need from the president. And essentially, this should be done on a bipartisan basis. We should be talking about these weapons of war. I mean, this shooting that happened in Dayton, in 32 seconds, nine people were killed. And that is a result of having a weapon of war in the hands of a person who is totally disturbed in intent on slaughtering innocent individuals.
Would a gun buyback program have to be part of any real solution to gun violence in America, given the fact that the Global Arms Survey estimates that there are nearly 400 million firearms owned by American civilians at the end of 2017? That's about 120 guns per 100 people.
Well, I think two things. One, whatever law we pass is not going to, quote, solve the problem. But there is a situation in this country that's unique, and that is that we've got about 5% of the world's population and almost 50% of all the guns. And the easy access to these guns, especially these automatic weapons, makes it very simple for somebody who's quite disturbed to do an immense amount of slaughter in a very short period of time. So I think we do have to pass, finally, some common sense gun safety legislation. But I also think there's cultural challenges that we face. I mean, the president's rhetoric that whips up this white nationalist sentiment is very, very dangerous. Also, I think we've got to address what is domestic terrorism and name that. You know, since 9/11, the focus and massive amounts of resources have been spent on protecting the homeland from international terrorists. But in that time, since 9/11, about as many people or a little few more have been killed by domestic terrorists than international terrorists. And yet we have no tracking system here to follow domestic terrorism. We don't have a coordinated approach. We just leave it all to the FBI. We don't have the resources in our local law enforcement agencies to assist them in trying to track what is going on in the white nationalist community. So I think that there has to now be a focus on this domestic threat that is emerging.
I want to double back to that question of a buyback just to get an answer. But also, are you started that answer thinking about gun legislation and a culture of guns in America and moved it to white nationalism. So do you see the connection or a connection between guns and racism and white nationalism?
I see what happens with the easy access to guns is that anybody who is disturbed and then comes to the decision that they want to do real damage. I mean, we had that in Fairhaven, where this young man wanted to have the highest body count of a killing in a high school, or with this white nationalist who appears to be the shooter in El Paso. And if those people have easy access to guns, that makes a tragedy much more likely to happen. And as far as the buyback is concerned, that is something we could definitely consider. It's voluntary. People could turn in guns, and that might help in some respects. But I also think that the massive number of guns out there means that none of us can have total confidence that any specific action, one thing, even the background check is necessarily going to end it. But we should do the things that we can do where we're making a societal commitment to take real care before a person is allowed to have a firearm. They should have a background check so we have some confidence that that person is going to use it responsibly. And, of course, the vast number of people who own guns do that.
In thinking about how to curb hate speech and the whipping up of a frenzy of somebody, whether it's white nationalism or other extremist views, would you advocate for the censorship or the shutting down of websites like 8chan, where the El Paso suspect reportedly spent time, or more censorship within social media sites like Twitter and Facebook?
I don't support infringing on First Amendment rights, but I do support public officials, starting with the president, to speak with compassion instead of division. You know, the country always is in need of a leader who uses our office of highest public trust to promote unity, not division. And that makes a difference. And the president's rhetoric, you know, from his campaign forward has been very divisive, and that has real consequences. You know, hate speech will lead to hate crimes, and people will feel authorized. Disturbed people who hear a validation of their disturbed ideas will act, and we've seen that.
Do you think the president has used hate speech, and do you think that hate speech has directly led to violence?
The president has used hate speech. I mean, when he calls all Mexicans rapists, when he has a ban on Muslims on the basis of the religion, when he totally contradicts the Martin Luther King admonition that we treat people with respect on the basis of the content of their character, not the color of their skin, that is hate speech in my mind. And hate speech, I think, contributes. It's not as though the hate speech is what pulls the trigger, but it provides the powder that makes a bad outcome more likely.
And yet there are people, civilians and people who work in the government, who continually denounce the things that President Trump says, say they're racist, say they're hateful, and yet he still continues to speak that way. And there doesn't seem to be anything that prevents him from speaking that way. So what can be done?
Well, the president can speak he chooses his words, and he does it deliberately. And none of us can stop him, and it's not as though there's a law that can stop him. I mean, there's going to be an election, and voters are going to be able to render a verdict on their approval or disapproval of the way the president is using the bully pulpit of that office. And that's really going to be the ultimate outcome. But all of us who have positions, and every citizen can, I think, stand up for inclusion, stand up for kind of Vermont values of mutual respect, civil discourse, and equality of treatment.
A final question for you, Representative Welch. There's no one in America, or at least no one with rational thought and even an ounce of empathy, who thinks that this kind of mass violence is at all okay. But there are a lot of differences of opinion across the country about what would work to help curb the levels of violence and hate we're seeing. And we can include in that gun violence that's not counted in mass shooting numbers, other forms of violence, hate speech, bullying, the intimidation directed at people of color, immigrants, trans people. I mean, the list goes on. So clearly no singular focus is going to solve a pervasive level of hate and animosity. What else would you include in an all-in approach that incorporates some of the things we've talked about today and also addresses poverty, mental health parity, and other things that contribute to this?
Well, first of all, I think each and every one of us has a responsibility to have mutual respect to our neighbors, and you got to start there. Secondly, public officials have to speak with respect about all people and not make these invidious distinctions on the basis of the color of their skin or their religion. Third, I think we do have to have law enforcement focusing on what is a domestic threat, and it's fanned in some cases by Russia interfering as it did in our last election. It's fanned by folks who get on the dark net. And it would make sense to me that we start tracking this and monitoring that activity in an effort to head off whenever we possibly can a tragedy. To some extent, that happened in Fairhaven because there was very good response by the school officials and by our law enforcement officials. And then you followed that up with the action that Governor Scott and the Democratic legislature took, bipartisan, on gun safety, and it gives people some hope that their elected officials are trying to take some action. People are realistic. They know that there's not, quote, a law that can solve everything, but they want to see that we're sharing the same goal of trying to minimize, not maximize, discontent and division within our society.
That was Congressman Peter Welch speaking to me yesterday.